You are listening to the Estheticians Earning More podcast with Brittany Hageman, episode number 143. Okay. Welcome to the Estheticians Earning More podcast. On this podcast, we talk about how to love your esthetician business without the hustle, exhaustion, or overwhelm as it booms into a successful business. I teach simple ways how to approach your business that gives you your life back while still growing a profitable business. I grew BLH Beauty in San Diego to a six-figure business, and I learned a lot along the way, which I'm excited to share with you here. So let's get started. Do you want to make $100,000 revenue in your esthetician business? If so, I would love to show you how. I want to invite you to coach with me in my one-to-one coaching program. It's completely customizable. The way that it works is we sit down and figure out what you've been doing in your business that hasn't been working, and then make a very specific plan that I help you follow over the course of 6 months. To get it done, we meet weekly for 30 minutes and discuss exactly what went well that week and what's going to, we're going to do next week, whether it's your pricing needs to be raised or you need to have boundaries with your clients, or if you need to learn how to sell skincare, or you need to niche down and you're doing way too many services and not making money, or all of the above, whatever the issue is, whatever the reason is you're not making money, we'll figure it out together and we will grow your business into a really profitable business that's sustainable, that you love, and that really helps people. I cannot wait to be your coach and to work with you. To learn more, go to the link in the show notes. And with that, on with today's episode. Okay, sorry. Before we get started, I forgot to tell you this one thing. Very important. Is on Monday, April 1st, I know it's April 1st, it's not an April Fool's Day thing. I'm offering another free webinar and training. I'm talking all about how to sell skincare, which is great because it really ties in today's episode. The theme of the webinar is how to sell skincare in your business without being cringy and how to sell more of it in a way that's like really natural and easy for you. I'm also going to coach anyone who comes live to the webinar who raises their hand to be coached. And that basically means is I pull you on screen and I answer any questions you have and help you through things in your business totally for free. Use the link in the show notes to sign up for the webinar. And if you can't make it, still sign up so you can get a recording. It's the only way you get the recording. Okay, now on to today's episode. Hi, David. Welcome so much to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you.
Hi, Brittany. I know it's a long time in the making. I'm super happy to be here.
It's super long. I know. Those of you who listen to my podcast know I invite people to be my podcast, and then a year later, I get them on. So that's kind of what happened here.
It's all right. You know, planes, trains, automobiles, time zones, you know, we have to, there's a lot of schedules at work, and we always figure it out.
Yeah, it is really early for where you are, so I really appreciate that.
All right. Okay,
so tell us a little bit about how you, about your backstory, and then I want to hear more about the microbiome, and like I know that's a core focus of your brand. So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So for those of you that don't know me, my name's David Valenzuela. I founded a company called Wish in 2018. But I'll give you a little bit of the backstory, Brittany, as to how we actually came to be, how this actually came to be, because it's, I'll give you the CNN Cliff Note version because I've been around for a minute. I started my career actually with Aveda.
Okay.
Back in the day when nobody knew what Aveda was, people call it Aveda and stuff. And it was like the first entry into the professional channel that was actually paying attention to estheticians, hairdressers, nail technicians, to the health of the what technicians were working with all day. So anyone that's ever used an Aveda product, you know, it's primarily known for hair care now. And it is, we were all about essential oils and just a very holistic approach to hairdressing. But here's the funny story about my career with Aveda. You know, this is before technology, Brittany. So there was no social media. We didn't have laptops. There was no email, which sounds archaic at this point. What? So we had to do in-person trainings, right? We would go to LA. I was in training for 3 weeks. I had to learn how to perm hair. We had to learn the lymphatic system. We had to learn how to give an Aveda massage. We're based in Palm Springs. So this is when my first territory was out here. And we had a lot of people that had Vichy showers. So I had to understand and learn how to do a Vichy shower treatment and like what that meant. You were going to be soaking wet. We're wearing bathing suits and effleurage massage with a salt scrub. You know, it was just, I had to learn how to do it. Like that was literally how we communicated the message of Aveda. So that was the first 10 years of my career. And it's a very interesting time, Brittany, because it was a lot of firsts for me. I was the youngest person to get promoted into a regional position. And at this point, through the decade, Aveda was acquired by Estee Lauder.
Okay.
And it was the first acquisition of Estee Lauder into the professional space. So it's very interesting. So through that tenure, like I got to run a full service salon in Palo Alto, 48 service providers. That was like, it was a pandemonium, whole nother podcast for that. But I did every position, started in Southern California, moved to the Central Coast, ended up being in San Francisco, managing Washington, Oregon, Northern California, and Hawaii, which is, you know, it's a small world because now we have one of our original Aveda accounts back in like early 2000s is now a significant Wish account in 2024 on Oahu. So it's a full spectrum moment. So then cut to my Dermalogica. It was called the business. What was it called back then? It's changed names. Oh my God. It'll come to me in a second. See, it's too early. My caffeine needs to kick in. So, there was it's called TSA. The Salon Association was hosting an event in San Francisco. Okay. Aveda was a big sponsor. So we're sitting there at this event. It was, you know, it was Bumble and Bumble. Aveda was there. But the thing that was most fascinating was there were founders of brands. So I think his name is Michael Gordon, who founded Bumble and Bumble. There was Jane Werwan. She was the keynote speaker that closed out the presentation. And if you've ever seen Jane speak, she is dynamic. And it was just so crazy. So I'm looking at my coworkers. There was like four of us in a row with Aveda saying, "You guys, that's why I'm in the industry." She was so inspiring. And she, you know, it's still a private company at this point. So I made a couple phone calls. I was just asking questions, turned into an interview, turned into a job offer. And that became my transition into Dermalogica in 2005. I mean, I know, right? What? So 2005, that's what brought me from my first time moving from San Francisco to Atlanta, managed the Eastern Seaboard. At some point in my tenure with Aveda, I managed every nook and cranny of the United States, reorganizations, all of it. But I had always been so fascinated with skin and being with Dermalogica. It was like, that's all we did. Mm-hmm. We weren't doing makeup. We weren't doing hair care. We weren't doing perms. And like we did launch some body stuff over the time period, but it was focused. So that was 7 years. And then I got recruited by a little company, which I didn't know, Brittany, at this time, like what anything about venture capital money, equity firms, any of that. But it was a company that actually funded Tesla. So there, I'm looking at their portfolio one day, like they flew in to interview me, these guys in suits. I had no idea what they were doing. I'm like, what is this? I've just been private company. Don't know.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, I was watching a documentary about Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. And there was the CEO of that company who's really friends with Elon. And I was like, I didn't even know what I was getting involved with. SpaceX was in their portfolio. They owned a lot of restaurants in Utah, but they didn't have anything in the aesthetic space. So that was 5 years with a brand called Cosmetics. That's where I know Cosmetics. It's actually based in Atlanta. So my reformulating the products, repackaging the products, rebranding the products, hiring an entire sales and education team, managing global distribution. Like I was in a suitcase, basically lived out of my suitcase for 5 years, but that was great. And then, as you know, my last role in the corporate world was for CEO as face for face reality.
Yes.
All things acne.
Yes. So then Wish came about.
Yes. Yes.
How it came about.
I'll tell you how it started. It was an idea way back in the day when I worked for Aveda, actually. I said, you know what? Someday I'm going to own a skincare brand. And so you guys, when you're thinking about the progression of your careers and you're in a treatment room where you're listening to this, like, I want to get to X. just think about how long this actually, I had this moment. I had like a lucid dream that I was going to own a brand called Wish. So weird. I don't know. I wrote it down in my little, at the time, Franklin Covey day planner. Wow. 2018. So we started as consultancy. So I had to like wrap my head around what it's going to take. The misconception, Brittany, about what it actually costs to actually start a brand, formulate a brand, package a brand. Nobody truly understands it. And I'm not saying people shouldn't do it. Yes. I'm saying if you are going to do it, you really need to have a really thorough understanding of the timing that it takes to formulate a product from scratch, the contract manufacturing method, all of that.
All of it.
Because it's no small undertaking. But I just started helping estheticians. So I wasn't really sure. And I've been working, Brittany, since I was 12 years old. So I've always been like, I was the kingpin babysitter when I was a little kid. Everybody wanted me to babysit for them. I was very, very tall as a kid. I was just very mature and very independent. And like, that was just my jam. Yeah. So I really was like, I'm going to take some time off because I haven't really had any time off in my adult life. So 2018, 2019, I was doing a little consulting, helping people develop some products, which was percolating in the background. About mid 2018, I was like, need to start formulating, knowing that it's going to take this much time, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, stability, compatibility. So then my first round of labels arrived the day that the world shut down from the pandemic.
Wow.
It was March 13th. I'll never forget it. All my labels have showed up. All my packaging has already rolled up. The semis have rolled up, like all of that. And I realized, you know what? I don't have any control over this. So I had the formulations we were working on. It was very, very slow. Labs had protocols. If somebody sneezed or somebody coughed during like the production, they would have to shut down the entire lab. And then everybody would have to be rapid COVID tested.
Gosh.
So the production was just crazy. So I actually finished my degree during the pandemic.
Oh,
totally random, right? Totally random. It was something that I wanted to do. And I had to like figure out how to catch like what was going to be, what am I going to focus on? Because I don't have control over anything else.
Yeah.
So I finished my degree in business. I have a bachelor's of science degree in marketing, which was always fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And I just really wanted to get that done. So October 2020, cut back to the beginning of my career. I was in community college when the opportunity with Aveda came up. And so I had to drop out of community college to start my career with Aveda. Didn't know that was going to be a decade. Didn't know that, you know, we don't know, right, what's going on. So I finished that. But as I'm going through the program, all universities had to ship to an electronic platform, right? Because no one was doing in-person learning. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it and I'm going, you know what? Our industry, the aesthetic community, needs to have a space to be able to learn like this. You're a mom, people are busy, they're doing treatments, they're running, you know, everyone's got lives and dogs and kids and like things, life is crazy. And nobody has really the time now as a working adult to go sit in a brick and mortar location for multiple times per week. So if you need to flip your laptop open at 10:30 when your kids are asleep and like learn something, that's what I wanted to create. So I actually used a platform from the university to put our Wish's education onto it so that it would be user guided, go at your own pace, speed it up, slow it down, picks you up exactly where you left off, interactive quizzes, you know, all the things that are learning. And I found out actually my learning style, I would actually go and do some pre-quiz stuff first and get an idea for what I was going to actually be required to learn. And for me, you know, everyone is different. Some people are visual learners, some people are audio learners. So you can read the captions if you want. You can listen to the audio if you want, like whatever's your best learning style. Okay. But I understood through that program that this was going to be something that the professional community needed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an investment. I mean, Stanford uses it. A lot of really prestigious institutions use the platform. So okay. I was like, all right, if it's good enough for them, then it's definitely good enough for the aesthetic community. So that actually turned into, so as I was coming out of face reality and looking at what was happening in dermatology. So you guys, the premise behind Wish Skin Health is microbiome health. And Brittany and I are going to talk about this because it is very fascinating. about what's happening. It is not a trend. It's not going away. It's part of the human body. Most people understand microbiome health. We've heard most about it through the gut health, talking about having a healthy microbiome. And what we've learned, Brittany, and there's a lot of education around microbiome health in the industry today. I interviewed Katie Marshall with Acne MBK Detective. She's a very thorough program on gut health. And we understand, you know, people understand the word inflammation now. They understand, you know, a diversity in diet. But I don't think people really get that your topical microbiome, you have an ecosystem of bacteria, fungi, yeast. It sounds disgusting because you're like, wait, what? What? This is all living on my face, in my hair, on my nail. Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But you guys, we went through this whole period of time for those that have been around for a while where we're like, oh my God, hand sanitizer. We have to clean everything, get the germs away. And the reality is that your immune system is built off exposure to bacteria and viruses. That's how you build a healthy, robust immune system. There's been studies with kids about, you know, keeping the environment super, super clean. Cause we know, I know you have a little one, you know, preschools, elementary schools are like petri dishes because kids are licking and touching everything and they're always having a runny nose. You know, you understand. So exposure, I know. Well, and you know what? We were all sick too. Like I live with my best friend when I first moved back to California. You know, my little godson Chase is in Montessori. And I said we all had runny noses for like 5 years because what are you doing? So that is our exposure to that is what builds your immune system. And so that actually is giving you the ability to have a robust response to being exposed to bacteria, viruses, things like that. So the same thing can be said for our topical microbiome. So there's a couple things in this, and I'll explain it like as top level, ask me whatever nerdy questions you want, I'll get into it. But your topical microbiome is directly related to your skin health. So what we know now, so there's been, you know, we're 20 some years of research, but really the topical microbiome really started being studied in 2014 in the world of dermatology. And as I started researching it, I had a light bulb moment one day. I was like, oh my God, this is like, can I apply for Nobel Prize? I had the understanding of psoriasis, dermatitis, acne, eczema. These are all topical skin conditions that are directly related to microbiome health. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole host of things, as we know, whether it's medication, whether it's diet, whether it's stress, whether it's exposure to overstripping products or an extremely dry environment, heated, cooled, you know, we're always in these controlled environments now, which are not great. You know, coming from 87% humidity in Georgia, my hair is already standing up. If you're watching this on YouTube, my hair is already crazy and textured and standing up. I go back to Georgia. Guys, I lived in Georgia for a long time. I was like, woo. But you know what I noticed, Brittany, is my skin. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't look like a wrinkled hag in Georgia because there's so much moisture in the air.
My skin hates Georgia.
Well, okay. So perfect example. So those.
It's worse here.
There's so many factors. So when you're talking about, you know, as an esthetician, you say, don't wash your face with extremely hot water, right? It's too much. You're exacerbating inflammation. All of the things, the water, the moisture content, your sun exposure, your diet, everybody's microbiome internally and externally are unique to them. It's literally as detailed as like your fingerprint. Wow. There is no one size fits all approach. So there are things we can do and there are ingredients that we can use. But what we understand now about the microbiome is that you have, we'll call it negative bacteria. So here is where it gets very, very interesting.
Okay.
C. acnes bacteria, the part of the ecosystem of your skin is C. acnes bacteria. For a long time, we called it P. acnes bacteria, which are shortened terms because people can't pronounce the words correctly, but it's C. acnes bacteria that we know now is what creates acne. Mm-hmm. Your C. acnes bacteria and staph bacteria are actually both keeping each other in check.
Okay.
So if you have an overproliferation of staph bacteria, it's overtaking the C. acnes bacteria and you can develop a staph infection.
Okay.
it flips the other way too. You can have a proliferation of C. acnes bacteria overtaking the staph bacteria, and you will then develop, if you're predisposed, you can develop acne.
Okay.
Or one of the other hosts of skin conditions. So the belief system that all bacteria is bad is actually not true. Right. It's actually what's keeping your skin healthy. It's keeping a balance and keeping viruses and things that would affect you negatively away. So what we know now is that there, and you're going to see, it's just going to continue. It's not ever going to stop now that we have this understanding, different types of pre and probiotics that can be applied topically to really help the wellness of the skin overall. And it's really exciting, Brittany, because not only can you keep things, eczema, dermatitis, acne, you know, all the conditions that are generally either medication, autoimmune, genetic, predisposed to some of these things, there's going to be a different treatment methodology for how we move forward with some of these things. Generally, for people, you know, you suffering from eczema yourself, steroid creams, things that suppress the immune system a little bit to say it's being overreactive, I think we're going to see a whole host of changes there. But the thing that people always pay attention to is that when your microbiome is healthy, you age slower. That's what everybody listens to. So forget that you cleared your acne or that your dermatitis went away or all that. It slows down the aging process. And whenever we talk about this in a podcast, YouTube, whatever, that's what people go back and listen to. Like, wait, what?
Wait, what?
I'm going to age slower. So so take it one step deeper now. So your microbiome is directly related to your barrier function. So when we talk about impaired barrier function, you are also impairing your microbiome function. You need a healthy, as we know, you know, like 70%+ of your cells in your body are water. But for your skin, topically, you need a healthy mix of both water and lipids to actually maintain healthy barrier function. Okay. And your microbiome is thriving off the sebum in the skin. Where we get into issues with acne, as we know, you're an acne expert. You get it. Face reality trained. You understand. When the bacteria is trapped, so it gets down into the pore follicle and there's a sebum that traps it in there. This is what triggers an inflammatory response. The body says this bacteria is not supposed to be here. So we know things like obviously proper exfoliation, chemical exfoliation, a benzoyl peroxide treatment product, benzoyl peroxide, which we should talk about that too, because that just heated up a whole firestorm in the last couple of weeks. But oh my
sure
God.
Has.
But basically, you guys, it's converting down into oxygen and delivering oxygen down into the follicle, which is then causing the inside of the pore follicle to shed. And then also that bacteria can't live in oxygen. So it therefore mitigates the bacteria that's causing acne. Interesting thing, Brittany, that people don't necessarily understand is that people will say, and it's just education, right? They're like, oh, well, benzoyl peroxide is anti-inflammatory. And I'm like, well, actually, it's not.
Yeah.
It does produce a little inflammatory response. So you have to know how to prescribe it correctly. And when you are prescribing a BPO product to your customers, you guys, you need to also make sure that you're adding in a bunch of antioxidants. It depletes the skin of L-glutathione. I put L-glutathione in our vitamin C product to put those beneficial components back into the skin matrix to keep your microbiome healthy. So it is you have to know how to prescribe it correctly. You got to make sure that you're not over drying the skin. You're not stripping the skin. The idea is to maintain the health of the skin while the client is clearing. So that's kind of a top line CNN version of microbiome health. There literally is the testing, the collection methods, and how many actual bacteria on the skin keeps being debated, but it's probably in the billions, like high numbers. Crazy. It's a crazy ecosystem.
So is microbiome the name for the ecosystem? Is that what that word means? Okay.
Yes.
I've heard you use it and I'm like, For a minute, David, I thought it was completely made up. I was like, this is just another fad of people saying, you know what I mean? Like they made some terminology of something and they're like, it's the microbiome and now we have to do this. And I was just like, oh my gosh, again, you guys, stop paying attention to all these trends.
The shiny objects of the world. So the reason why, so I part of my exposure to the industry, Brittany, and I feel so, I don't even know, I was just going through life like on the magic carpet ride, but getting to work with founders of companies, I've been, so it's not all fairies and rainbows, and like, you know, there are moments as an entrepreneur you have to make difficult decisions because you are in charge. It is your own money, like you are your brand. But the I think one of the takeaways that Jane, Raymond and Jane, the founders, husband and wife of Dermalogica, they were never interested in trends. And some of those things, because, you know, we were, I was like, CE Ferulic had taken off, you know, from SkinCeuticals, which is like, I don't know, 100, almost $190 now for 1 ounce of vitamin C, L-ascorbic acid. Everybody knows it. You know, they filed for one of the first patents on stabilized vitamin C, and, you know, people lovingly refer to it as hot dog water and all the YouTubers. And it's crazy because it is a very expensive product. We were challenging, like, we need to release a vitamin C product. So not Ray and Jane sold the company in 2015. Unilever, I believe within 2 years of owning it, of course, launched a whole bunch of vitamin C products. You can't negate the fact that vitamin C is beneficial in skin, just like a retinoid or a vitamin A. Like the science is there, the data is there, the efficacy is there. So when I started looking at the, and I know all the trends, I know the stem cell trends and the epidermal growth factor, like I know all the, I've been around to see all of it. This is part of our body and our health, and it is a component of who every individual human being is. So we're not going to, like, a year from now, like, no one's going to be talking about the microbiome. Interesting thing. So as I'm doing the, as I'm researching this, and as I'm researching, you know, your gut health directly related to your overall well-being, we understand that there's more research now into your mental health, a lot of your immune system, a lot of your serotonin production. Everyone thinks everything's happening in the brain. It's actually happening in your gut. And so, you know, as you know, all the drugs and things that we prescribe or that get prescribed for acne, they're very disruptive to not only the microbiome in the gut. And it doesn't matter if it's antibiotic or isotretinoin, known as Accutane. These things are disrupting the health, not just the health of the gut and your microbiome in your gut, but also your total body, which ends up being topical. So things that are like these things, like, why do I want to support my microbiome? Well, your microbiome, like something like vitamin C, you guys, it never actually reaches the skin. Doesn't matter how much you ingest, the body uses it all for internal function. It never actually reaches the skin topically, which is why we apply vitamin C topically to boost the efficacy of our sunscreens, promote that collagen production, high antioxidant value. You have to apply that topically. You're never going to get that internally. So it's just things that support the microbiome. So the very interesting thing, Brittany, every time you wash your face, okay, or your body, your hair, anything, you're disrupting your microbiome. So there's some very interesting research that just actually came out fourth quarter of last year about ingredients that actually put the microbiome back into homeostasis the fastest. And one of those ingredients was high molecular weight hyaluronic acid, helping the skin snap back in. We know hyaluronic acid is a hero ingredient. We know there's multiple weights. I have a multiple molecular weight vitamin C. It's called C21. It actually puts the skin back into homeostasis the fastest. So when you're thinking about your home care routine, whether you're spraying a toner, like this is my, I can't not spray this all throughout the day because it's so dry here. You want to keep that moisture in the skin. Antioxidants, obviously, high molecular weight hyaluronic acid, those are things that are going to get your microbiome back in health. And as you know from, you know, practicing in San Diego, and you know, you had more humidity there when you're treating acne. Generally, your acne clients are not interested in more moisture. It's a little bit of a education, you know, about training people, like, you're still going to need to use a moisturizer. We still need to use SPF. We don't want to overstrip your skin. We're going to cleanse gently. But yeah, you are disturbing the microbiome through cleansing, through any kind of toner application, through chemical exfoliation, through BPO application. It is adjusting the microbiome. And the key thing as a an esthetician when you're actually clearing acne to look at is where your client is at in the clearing process and understanding how to adjust your products accordingly so that you're not putting them, acne is already an inflammatory skin condition. We don't want to add extra inflammation to the skin. And traditionally, without postgraduate education, people think we have to really dry the skin out because
Right.
it does need oil to produce acne, right? Well, if you can balance, it's all about balance, bringing the skin back to balance. If you can balance wherever your client is at, and I always say one size fits one because it's true. Like there are no two, where you guys, skin is like your fingerprint. It's literally, it's your ecosystem, your microbiome, your internal, it's all individual. It's never going to be a one size fits all thing, which is why proactive, I think now that's been sold maybe four or five times, is not the answer. And you know, women are the fastest growing onset of adult acne. And I'm sorry, they don't need to be using proactive.
No, they do not. I mean, come on, we all had a proactive horror story. Some of those of us who've had acne, you know.
Yes. And the those clients today, so remember it was a three-step system, right? It was like scrub the crap out of the skin, alcohol-based toners, and then, you know, a benzoyl peroxide application. And you're like, where's your moisturizer? Where's your SPF? And if you see, if you're listening to this and you see and you ask your client, you know, tell me about all the products you use, and you've had a proactive user from the 90s, they generally appear older. They blew their face up, they overexfoliated it, and they weren't using any SPF. And now, for all those people back in the day, SPFs were really at the elementary stage, and I get it, they were greasy. The raw materials that actually make SPF, they're generally greasy in nature. So, you know, we have our physical chemical blends of things, but back then, typically sunscreens were very oily and gross, and nobody with acne was like, I'm not putting that on my face. Absolutely not. So I understand it, but those days are over. And you know, interesting story, Brittany. Proactiv was actually, so the Katie and Kathy, the dermatologist that founded it, they sold it to Guthrie Renker, which was the infomercial company, which was actually based down the street from our offices. It was so weird. I drove by Guthrie Renker for years. And then it was sold again to Nestle, which everyone thinks is chocolate milk in the US. It's a huge company. Then it was sold to Galderma, which is the same company that owns a lot of injectables. And now it's been sold again. So, you know, it's still a very well-known brand. They still advertise. I still look at all their stuff, but we just have too much knowledge now about what's going on in skin. We have a better understanding of how to treat it more effectively, and it's old technology. Sorry, proactive.
I mean, we all hate it. That's not anything new to the esthetician world. Okay, so I had a couple of questions for you from what some of the things that you said. So essentially, you've already kind of done this, but I wanted to kind of help people for maybe this is the first time hearing about microbiome, kind of wrap their brain around this. So I think more and more, especially the acne community, people understand that barrier repair is super important because if the barrier is not
Yes.
repaired, then you can't stop it and nothing's gonna work. So that's essentially the repair of the microbiome.
Correct. So your microbiome, in order to function correctly, has to have a healthy mix of lipids. So it's more so, I mean, you can use you know, our cells are so much water that obviously we need a version of moisture. And that is, you know, moisture, we usually think of hydration as water, and we think of like moisturizers as like more oil or lipid-based things. You need that healthy mix in order to have healthy barrier function for your microbiome to work. If the skin is too dry, so what I'm seeing, Brittany, is when a client overdries their acne kids, they are prone to more post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. The skin is not functioning healthy because the barrier is impaired, the microbiome is not working correctly, and you're more prone to PIH when you've overdried the skin when it's healing from an acne lesion. It takes longer. That those dark spots that show up, especially on higher Fitzpatrick types, if you've overdried the skin, you will notice that those take longer to go away because the skin has been impaired along the way. It can't heal itself correctly.
Wow, that makes complete sense.
It's huge. So I get to watch this on a, I call it the 30,000 foot view, you know, because I've seen it in a global, There's things you can do, can't do in Australia that we can do in the US, can't do in Canada, can't do in the US. Europe has different regulation. And I see how people have treated acne on a global platform, and it just gives me all this information. But I'm also watching, our pros across the country send me pictures, help me with this case. What do you think's going on here? And 9 times out of 10, if somebody has been overdried through the clearing process, they can experience some PIH.
I used to as a teen, I've always had acne as a teen and a young adult, and I always had, VIH, warm or red after. I
Yeah,
didn't ever
PIE,
have like
yeah.
pigmentation, but I had just red marks that would just take a long time to get rid of. And of course, I was drying my skin out to try to get rid of the acne. I was very oily. I never would have put any oil back into my skin, right? So
Yeah.
it was the typical teen stuff.
Yeah.
One of the things that made me think of kind of you were talking about probiotics in the skin and made me think of one of my daughter's friends is having like a lot of severe eczema and rashes. And her mom's like, I want her to have probiotics in your skin. So I'm going to do a yogurt bath. And I was like, that isn't a thing. But can you explain to some? I know. I was like, that's not how skin works. But how would you, if someone who's like, okay, I want to have probiotics in the skin, what does that look like from a product standpoint?
So there's a new ingredient technology. So I'll give you a couple things. So I'm not the trend person, and I'm not the just because a raw material is introduced, I'm going to throw it into a product and start marketing it like this, because the raw materials, you guys, raw materials are all the ingredients that go into your specific products. They advertise and market to brands just like brands advertise and market to you. So they can make a lot of really crazy claims because it's not being sold directly to the consumer. So a lot of it gets into the gray area of sales, changing cellular function and stuff, which is technically drugs, which they can all get away with because it's not being sold to a consumer. So you have to do your own diligent research. I look for efficacy and I look for some time. So things have to be on the market for a while and have some really good efficacy before we report them back and say, this does this. So to answer your question, there are ingredients. So my number one selling serum, the first product we introduced, it is Lactobacillus ferment based. Okay. So there's a whole family of Lactobacillus. There's lysate, there's different versions of it. We use a vegan version of it because I'm not using any animal-derived ingredients. And what this does is it promotes the healthy bacteria on the skin. So keeping things in balance. So this is like, if you think about taking a probiotic for your stomach, for your gut, you're basically helping, you're putting healthy or you're feeding healthy bacteria in the skin that helps with digestion. Things are going to ease the process through the gut. And digestion is another thing there's acne. Digestive enzymes are actually can be helpful for gut health issues that also can help with your acne if you're not digesting your things correctly or your body's in an inflamed state from foods that you're eating. Same thing for topical. So as we start including probiotics, prebiotics in topical skincare, you're just better supporting that ecosystem. So the skin can essentially function optimally and heal itself. It is a crazy concept, Brittany, because we traditional Western medicine in the United States, we love to treat symptoms. We love to give spironolactone to women and say, oh, we got to mitigate your hormones. We need to take the androgens down, which is all directly related to oil production. And you're like, what? We're doing all this stuff with hormones just so we can take oil production down? Like, small-minded, in my opinion. In my opinion, I have physicians come for me all the time. It's all right. Antibiotics. And I'm sure have seen the clients that come that have been on antibiotics for multiple years. You guys, you are not supposed to be on antibiotics for multiple years. It is not supposed to happen. We now have a prevalence of antibiotic resistance. You don't ever want to be in a position where you've consumed so many antibiotics in your life that you've built up an ecosystem that's now resistant to antibiotics and you have an infection that won't clear because of your resistance. It's not okay. It's not okay. And I know that the world of dermatology, we have a prevalence of overprescription in the dermatology world in the US specifically for acne. It's a whole nother podcast, but also the Accutane. So we prescribe or Accutane gets prescribed for to take down the oil production. If you don't have oil in the skin, you can't have acne formation. But if you think of all of the body functions, your lubrication of your joints, the lubrication of your eyes, your entire body, your skin needs lipids to stay healthy. So when you're shutting off all that activity to take care of a top, I understand you guys, it's not, some people do need a medical therapeutic. If it's all the way down their middle of their back and their shoulders, you're going to need a medical therapeutic. But those are like less than 10% of the cases in the US. It's such a small amount.
Very rare.
The therapeutic gets thrown at it so much, you are disrupting your microbiome, not only externally, but also internally.
Right.
You have busted all of your microbiome function with one of those therapeutics. And so now we have information about gentle cleansing, probiotics, putting things back into the skin to make it healthy again. The, you know, phytoactive clearing serum is actually, there's 21 actives in it.
Okay.
So there's a sebum regulator in it. There is a pigment suppressor in it, which is very, very, has a lot of data and efficacy behind it. But the lactobacillus ferment, in addition to promoting that healthy bacteria, calms inflammation in the skin, calms redness in the skin, calms down that redness that's just occurring from angry acne, inflamed skin, calms all of that back down. And when the skin is in its healthiest state, that's when the aging process slows down, which is just happens to be a side effect of good treatments.
I mean, I'm going to have to like go back and listen to this a couple times because there's so much information. I mean, it makes complete sense, especially for those of you who treat acne and you've seen it. You've seen that the skin, whenever I sell a skincare program to someone, I'm always like the actives. I'm like, this is like if we're going to the gym and working out really hard. And then the moisturizer, the hydrators, the SPM, like this is the water. This is the stretching. Like if you went to run a marathon and all you did was run and you never drank water, you never stretched, your legs would be in so much pain. You couldn't do it. It's sustainable. So it's the same. We understand that concept in other parts of our body. But the skin is where, you know, I think the years of miseducation has really kind of what's been challenging.
It is. So the research is, it's never ending. You guys, anybody with a Google search, you can, you know, look up information. I look at the American Academy of Dermatology frequently. I'm a subscriber to JAMA, which is the Journal of American Medicine. I look at cosmetics and toiletries. Like I don't like to take information. It is just a research point, and you having a better understanding of that will help you in your mindset for treating acne, and people are going to have breakthroughs, Brittany, when they listen to this, because they're going to be going, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. And they're going to go, well, wait a minute, should I not be using this? Should I not be using that? And there are some questionable ingredients that are available in the aesthetic space today.
Yeah.
And you guys, the you know, we love to do chemical exfoliation with our acne clients, and there's different ways to go about doing that. You know, your cells are shedding up to 5 times faster when you have acne. So you want to address the cell shedding. You want to address the bacteria. You want to address the oil production. You got to address all of those things in their totality and not just go crazy after like, we're just going to peel the crap out of this face. And like, that, by the way, is there's a researcher at Harvard. His name is David Sinclair. He talks about adversity mimetics.
Okay.
And it's a high science term, but essentially every time you're peeling the skin or you're throwing adversity at it so that it can come back and heal.
Mm-hmm.
A cold plunge, sitting in the sauna, long-term intermittent fasting, those are all considered adversity mimetics. And I'm studying that space and being very close to it because we know diet is, you know, if you're going to have a crappy diet and eat a bunch of dairy and a bunch of sugar and stuff, you're going to trigger an insulin response. Guess what that triggers, you guys? More oil production. If you have acne, you're taking a bunch of inflammatory foods and you have an inflammatory skin condition, more inflammation, more acne. Like, it is not just your, I'm going to do a peel and I'm going to get the skin clear.
Right.
It's looking at the individual as a whole.
and you know, I think that is a generational thing too. Like, inject people who are estheticians in the 90s, you do the strongest chemical peel out there. You wanted their skin to be coming off in sheets.
Yes.
Versus a very gentle peel that, you know, maybe they can feel a little bit of roughness, a slight peeling, but it's not like they can't go outside for 3 days.
We recommend, so, you know, with the way that we formulated our peels, that clients can come in as frequently as every 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And then, you know, I have some practitioners downtown LA, and they're like, David, you know how hard it is to drive around LA? Like, I got to really treat the skin. I'm like, all right, you're going to do some more peel passes on the skin. They've got a little bit more time to recover in between their treatments. Of course, yes, treat your clients where they're at, but you don't have to be over aggressive. If they can come in on a more frequent basis, a little chemical exfoliation goes a long way.
It really does. And I have sensitive skin, I have eczema, so I can't do really strong stuff. And I found when I do the lighter stuff, it always responds so much better than a strong peel or whatever.
You know, interesting fact, Brittany, right now I was just reading this on the plane coming back from Atlanta. The world of dermatology has no actual definition for sensitive skin.
Really?
There's literally not a technical definition of sensitive skin. And they literally, a bunch of dermatologists got together and they were like all trying to pound it out about sensitive skin, and they would not come to an agreement on truly, even though you know that over 70% of consumers say, oh, I have sensitive skin.
All right.
There's not a technical medical definition for what sensitive skin actually is. And we're sitting in 2024 going, what?
You're right. People overuse it. For sure. People would always think that, oh, you have reactive skin. Your skin is going to break out or whatever.
Versus, and you can sensitized. Yes. Well, and the sensitized skin versus sensitive skin. Sensitized meaning you've over cleansed, you've over exfoliated, you've sensitized your skin, versus having sensitive skin where everything you put on your skin, you might be reactive to it.
They
were trying to clarify just trying to come up with the definition so that people could come in. And then they were talking about when their clients come in and they're like, I can't use any of this, I can't use product. They would just put them in it. And I'm forgetting the term right now. You guys, it's early in the morning in California. But there's a term that they put them in that was basically like, oh, it will come to me. It was something about the overusage of cosmetic product, but they just lumped everybody into that category.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, this is interesting that even in 2024, we don't have an actual definition for what sensitive skin is.
Wild. I also think about highly sensitive person, so I think that just stems out on my skin. Everything is sensitive.
And you know what? The skin, you guys, we need to be gentle with our skin. It's like Katie says, it's a two-sided organ. You know, it's protecting things from coming out as much as protecting things from coming in.
Yeah.
And you're the more gentle and caring and respect that you can give your skin, the better it's going to treat you. And you're not, you know, we remember the whole thing about sulfates when sulfates were all a big rage, like shampoos and stripping hair color. Yeah. And, you know, sulfates got this bad rap. And then Ordinary came out and they're like, we're launching a sulfate shampoo and sulfate. And the reality is sulfates are not bad if you are formulating correctly. I don't use them. I don't use them because people are like weirded out about it. But when a product was formulated with a high surfactant matrix or a high percentage of sulfates, you have all these corneocytes, tight junctions, they're protein bonds in your skin, and sulfates basically dissolve them. So then you have a lot of transepidermal water loss. Your skin is like dry. And brands back in the day loved to use sulfates because then people use more moisturizer as a means of selling more product. But having an understanding as to like why. Now, if you formulated a product with a very, very small percentage of sulfates, it probably would be effective and okay. But sulfates as a whole, you know, and it's going to be different for every skin type. But if you can avoid that and use, you know, a whole host of really gentle surfactants, you're going to be better off.
Wow. Okay.
I know. You know what? We could geek out and nerd out on specific ingredients, like gentle. That's the name of the game, you guys. Gentle. And your acne, what I see, Brittany, also, the reason we use meter dose pumps, our airless pumps and things, is that I know everybody, consumers, and especially acne clients, believe more is better. So you're like, you're going to use one pump of this serum or two pumps of the serum. And they're like, oh no, 4 to 5 pumps. And you know, especially if someone's using a BPO or something, they think it's going to get rid of their acne faster. And they're just going to make their skin very angry. Slow and steady.
Right. Oh, no, that. Okay. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you some random questions. Or I guess
one
random. You mentioned the stem cell fat. I've heard very mixed opinions. I'd love your take on topical stem cells.
Woo, this could get heated. Okay, you guys don't hate me because I don't want to, it's like telling me telling people that there's no Santa Claus. So stem cells, okay, so there's a couple different ways that this gets marketed weird. So you'll hear stem cells from plants, okay? Stem cells from plants, we've extracted, we've had this stem cell thing. And you know what, you guys, honestly, in all the research I've done, stem cells from plants are providing, maybe they have some calming attributes, maybe they have some antioxidant attributes. But stem cells, only your stem cells, you personally, there is some research for some umbilical cord stuff for like when you have a baby of storing those stem cells, that those stem cells could be used for the injury of your child or potentially. So I'm close to this because I have a friend that actually worked for the company that represented this, that sold this product to people giving birth. They don't last forever. There's a very timeline, like about a decade, that people could use them. But this whole idea of topical stem cell application, anytime I look at these formulas, Brittany, I go, you're going to notice that there's usually peptides in the formulation as well. I think, not to call out brands, but Skin Medica was one of the first ones that came out with it. It was called Condition Media, and it was supposed to be stem cells from, they say they're synthesized in a lab, but they were originally derived from the foreskin of a penis. And they were put into this media, created this whole thing. Well, it
I
created
remember.
such a backlash that Australia said this product is not allowed in our country, even
Exciting.
though it's been synthesized in a lab, the origination of where it came from. So now I go and I look at that. You guys may be familiar with it if you're working at a Medi Spa, TNS serum. Go back and look at the ingredient deck and look at how many peptides are in that formula. And I can guarantee you that's what's doing the heavy lifting. It's got nothing to do with the conditioned media.
So I guess my question with the stem cells that I had heard from someone who did product development for a skincare line was that stem cells will help grow anything on your skin, whether it's skin cancer or healthy skin cells.
So there is there's debate. So the same thing could be said for if you have a precancerous lesion and you're using a retinoid, something that is causing cell proliferation, cells to grow quicker. Technically, that could be true for a cancerous lesion as well. You could accelerate the growth of that. It's the research is varying, Brittany, and because I know people are microneedling with these serums and like these stem cell serums, and they're like, oh my gosh, no, my clients have a lot of healing attributes from this product. It really, really works. And I question some of the science. It's very interesting data that I'm not fully 100% behind as like advocating for. We have growth factor peptides, we have retinoids, we have things that actually have more efficacy data behind them for creating change in the skin, whether you're, there's peptides that will stimulate oil production, there's peptides that will mitigate oil production, tyrosinase inhibitors that will inhibit that enzyme process for melanin performing in the or melanin producing in the skin. You've got retinoids that are cell proliferation, getting the cells to multiply faster. So those things have a better efficacy record than some of the other stuff. So I'm not saying that there's not something that could exist that could possibly be. The research that I've seen today so far in 2024, I'm not fully behind it. I usually look at the deck and go, there's something else in there that's actually doing this function.
So you kind of just feel like the stem cell title on it is just a more of a marketing term than it is. That's really what's working.
I've watched some really intelligent people in the industry, some doctors with brands talk about their products, and the science behind what they're talking about makes sense, but not in the way that it's being applied.
What's wrong?
And you guys, this is all about education, right? So when you do your own, just don't listen to me. Go do your own research and look at it. The information for usually what is being explained to the aesthetic community is how stem cells function, but you're looking at, did they do, what kind of a clinical trial happened? Was it in vitro? Was it in a petri dish? Was it actually human skin? Were there 30 people? Were there 20 people that had a cosmetic appearance benefit? Once you start digging down on the science a little bit, Brittany, it starts to diffuse itself a little bit. And it's okay. You know what? I'm not here to say that any brand is better or worse than another brand. I'm just saying that we have access to research, and that's where I come to the table and I go, you know what? That doesn't make any sense. And I have some very intelligent people that I refer to and that I follow and that I study, and I'm will ask a question to about it. And the stem cell thing is it's a hot topic.
Well, I mean, I do appreciate your as a business owner, as a founder of a skincare company, to be rooted in research, that you are looking at research first and foremost. And as the research changes, you'll make changes as well. You're not like, well, this is what sells. This sounds really cool, so this is what we're going to say. Even though we know it's really, this is what's happening. We're going to go along with the trends. I think that that itself is incredible. I love that.
And I thank you. I appreciate that. So the thing about our industry is that, as you know, 90 plus percent of our industry is focused on quote unquote anti-aging. And I refuse to use a term. And I'm like, stop saying it, people. We're all aging. I know there's brands out there saying we can reverse age and age reversal. I'm like, stop saying that. We're all aging. So you can age slower. I call it intelligent aging or healthy aging. But the premise of our industry is really cosmeceutical and making healthy skin healthier and or make it appear to be better. You know, we got a lot of silicones and primers. You're like, oh, my skin looks great. Well, you just basically applied a makeup product. But as you know, Brittany, you have firsthand knowledge. You can't play with acne. You cannot play with acne. You either produce products that get results and people buy them again and again and again. If somebody is not going to get results with their acne or it's not working for them, they're not buying that product again.
No, they're
Versus
not.
the rest of the industry that's just trying to make pretty people prettier, there's a perception in that. Did I get a good night's sleep and I put that eye cream on the next morning? I'm like, oh my gosh, I look at what a, you know the drill. So with acne, you have to do the research, and also being a professional brand and educating estheticians how to properly navigate this space. It's not just we're not just putting fluffy products out to the market. You actually have to do the research, got to do the work. You're going to hear more and more and more about the microbiome health. It is not going away. It's not a trend. Dermatology is going to talk about it. And for eczema, psoriasis, all these other skin conditions, mark my words, there's going to be therapeutics that come out that are going to be about supporting microbiome health. It's
I
coming.
cannot wait. I cannot wait.
Huge.
I know. I first heard about microbiome from my friend Sarah, who's one of, I know she is one of your clients. And I
Oh,
was like,
Sarah in Washington.
yeah.
I love Sarah. Shout out to Sarah. Sarah was one of my very first course purchasers.
Was
Very
she?
first.
She's
She
so
was that
sweet.
week that we released it. And then we are Beauty Business Summit. There was a hurricane that came through. So we were supposed to release it at that event. So she was very patient. And I was like, Sarah, listen, I'm gonna love on you as much as I can. And
I
I thank
remember.
you so much. She was so patient. But yeah,
It
Sarah, I
was
love
that
her.
was a time. Melody is her last name. Zara Melody. And she, anyways, but she was telling me about, and I was like, because we met in person, and I was like, Sarah, what is this? What are you talking about?
I
But I'm
know.
glad to learn more about it, and not, again, not from a trend standpoint, but from like the name of the microbiome. To now I know it, understand it, is the name of what I already knew about. It just is the best way to describe the whole ecosystem is the it's what we already inherently knew before
Yes.
we knew what that was.
Yes. And it's everywhere on your body. It's not just your face. And there's different research because you have different things, different bacteria that live in different parts of the body. I know it sounds the crotch area, the armpit area, like there's different bacteria living, but like there's certain things that live on the upper half of your body that don't live like on your legs. It's very, very interesting. And it's, I believe from what I can gather from, it's about sebaceous activity. And like, the palms of your hands are going to have like not a lot of sebaceous activity, just like your legs and your feet. So that would make sense why there's different bacteria on different areas of the body. But the idea is that we want to keep it in homeostasis, keep it healthy, and then we can keep a lot of skin conditions at bay.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And it's so interesting about the antibiotics because, of course, I grew up in the 90s where we got antibiotics all the time for everything, right? The doctors just
I
gave it to us for
mean,
everything.
yes.
And I was recently, my daughter knew the doctor because she actually had pink eye. And when we were at the doctor, they're looking at her ears and they're like, oh my gosh, she has an ear infection, which she wasn't complaining about. She wasn't like in pain. She wasn't creating her sleep. And the doctor was like, we've changed our stance on antibiotics. We only give them if the child is physically in pain and really does need antibiotics. She's like, I'll write you a prescription, but only get it if you feel like she really needs it. It will probably clear her. Oh, you didn't even know it existed. And yes, we didn't get her that, you know, if she'd been paying for giving them to her. But, you know, it was just such an interesting, she's like, yeah, we've learned how it can really wreak havoc on small children's bodies. And if they don't really need it, we don't want to give it to them. And it was the first doctor that had, I told me that, and not that we, she's really been on antibiotics before, but it was such an interesting thing because normally, you know, ear infection, antibiotics is like what you do no matter what, right? And so it was really refreshing actually to hear that from a doctor.
I love that because we have a better understanding of the immune system now, and everybody wants to look great. You know, our brand, we have one, our motto for our entire brand is confidence. It's confidence, restoring confidence for your clients and restoring confidence in estheticians, aesthetic providers on how to effectively treat acne. Confidence. One word. That's it.
I love it. That is wonderful. And I'm saying that it completely aligns with you and what you believe in. So I love that.
Yes, 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 yes. Well,
thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming on and teaching us so much. And I'm gonna listen back to edit it, and I'll listen to it multiple times just to learn everything that you said. There's so many great nuggets in here.
I mean, so much information. And you know, we could have like a 3-hour like webinar about it, and I could be showing slides and like show the bacteria in the skin when you actually apply, but we gotta have it in sound bites, right? You gotta take a little bit of it. And you know, at the end of the day, everybody, you guys, I just encourage everybody. No one's really teaching in the aesthetic community about doing research. Mm-hmm. And I see people type in all these aesthetic forums, like they'll ask a question and I'm like, you know what? Don't ask for opinions.
Right.
Don't go in and ask for people's opinions. Go and actually spend 15 minutes. Everybody has access to a lot of information through the American Academy of Dermatology. Everybody can research the National Institute, the NIH, the National Institute for Health. Like, you can go and find a lot of really cool information and get a couple articles on a certain topic. Don't just read one thing and be like, that's the law. Look for peer-reviewed information where multiple eyes have been on it. Multiple people have researched it. Read the two articles and then go, you know what? I now have an educated opinion about what this is based off the research that I've done. So that's all. You know, it's just we're just making ourselves smarter every day.
Yeah, not research on a Facebook forum.
Exactly. And again, you know what? There are some very smart people. There are some smart people that have done the research and post the research, but that is not the norm.
That's also not, they're not the authority of all. They know everything. So.
Right. So if you ever see something, or you see an esthetician post something, or a brand post something, or a doctor post something, it doesn't mean that you still can't go and do the research behind it. Like the research I was looking at about that whole hyaluronic acid debacle thing. And I, you know, one of the articles was from 1954. I'm like, I can guarantee you that there's newer research, and we're not just using low molecular weight hyaluronic acid by as a singular use ingredient. It's usually blended with other things. Like, come on. Yeah, let's everybody calm down.
Your old research. Okay. That's not what we use anymore. We're going to keep using it.
Exactly.
If you're interested in David's brand and his skincare line, I will have all the information in the show notes in this episode, so you can click through and see if you want to be interested in looking at his products and being one of his pros. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful line that would help anyone's business beyond what we already currently know about acne.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Trywish.com is the easiest way to find us. Super easy, easy to remember. All the information's there.
Great. Thank you so much, David. Thank you for being here. Thanks for teaching us. I'll have to have you come back and teach more. It'll be a thing with David. What else is going to teach us today?
I will absolutely come back. And I'm excited you're coming on too for a Wish podcast coming up here next week. So I have actually two more recordings today, and I've got two on Monday and then you next Friday. So we're going to load up the deck again.
Here we go.
So thank you for having me. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time and that you contribution to the acne community. It's super important and needed.
Thank you.
Hey, if you like this podcast, please rate and review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. I cannot tell you how much that helps my podcast grow. So you can click 5 stars if you like it and you want to give me 5 stars. And please leave a review about telling me why you like it so that I can help other estheticians grow their business. Thank you so much.